Today the topic is conflict resolution. When we are living in our normal lives, we always come across all kinds of conflicts. And these conflicts create problems of all kinds. And we want to resolve these conflicts. There was a Western philosopher by the name of Hegel. He was a person who spoke about his conflict resolution, conflicts of all kinds and even Marx, when he spoke about communism. He began to speak about conflicts between people in society. And he pointed out that history is always going in the form of conflicts and resolution. And in these conflicts, the human beings begin to have conflicts because this is a conflict between ideas of people. One person's way of looking at things come in conflict with another person's way of looking at things. And when that happens, there is always a conflict. You know, sometimes when people get married, at the beginning, they think they are entering heaven. But after some time, they begin to notice that the husband's way of thinking is different from the wife's way of thinking. And they come in conflict. Sometimes the conflict becomes so problematic that they begin to want to divorce, and they go to courts. Sometimes today there are kind of psychotherapist who do counseling. They call it family counseling. And they try to resolve these conflicts. The important thing is to understand what Hegel came up with, what is called the dialectics. And this dialectic means it is a conflict between two views. If a person expresses a view, the first view that is expressed is called the thesis. And then the second view that is expressed, which is opposed to this view, is called the antithesis. So he pointed out, if these two individuals who are having these two different views come together and make a discussion, a proper discussion is not an argument. An argument means the first person who presents the first view will want to say, this is the truth. What I am saying is the truth. What you are saying is false. Now, this kind of thinking the Buddha has been speaking about. And the Buddha used a word for this. It is called ekansavada. Ekansavada means a one-sided view. That means to say, hold on to your view and say, this is my view, and that is the truth. Your view is false. So the other person also says, my view is the truth, your view is false. And if you go to take that attitude, then it can only end up with a fight. But instead of doing that, these two people can listen to the other person's point of view. You let the other person speak and describe the point of view and show the arguments that support this point of view, and then listen properly. And the other person also begins to do the same thing, listen to your point of view. And when the two people begin to listen to these two different points of view, they begin to understand that there is something in that other point of view also. And ultimately, a new view arises, a third view, which is acceptable to both. That view is called synthesis. So you have the first view, which is called the thesis. The second view is called the antithesis. And the third view is called the synthesis. Now, if it ends up in that form, then there is no argument. That is a real discussion. When we have a discussion of that type, the conflict is resolved. The resolution of the conflict comes when both parties listen to each other. There is an analogy, a story that illustrates this. There was a soldier who went on horseback. He was going on a road from north to south. And the other person, another person was going, he was also another soldier going on horseback. But he was going from south to north. So, when they started going, they came to a point where they both met. And at that point, it was a crossroad. That means two roads crossing at that point, and there was a boat. And this boat, when the man who came from the north saw the boat, it was a black board with white letters on it. The board was black and the letters were white. And the man who came from the south, when he looked at the board, the board was white and the letters were black. So this was really two sides of the board. One side was black, the other side was white. So when they started speaking to each other, one man said the board is black, the other man said the board is white. So they couldn't agree because they were seeing two sides of the board, and it ended up with a quarrel where they were going to fight. And then, of course, a certain priest came along and he asked, "Why are you fighting?" So one man said, "Well, this man says his board is black, but the board is white here, So the priest looked at the two different sides of the boat and saw that one side was black, the other side was white. There were two sides with two colors. So he said, "Why are you fighting? Look at the other side of the boat." So they both looked at the boat, both sides, and found that actually the other man was right because he saw a different side of the boat. And so they began to agree and they became friends. So all conflicts are resolved in this way. The thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis. The three kinds of views. You know, there was a man from United States who wrote a book. Some of you may have read this book. It is called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. There he says, never tell a person you are wrong. That will only lead to an argument and end up in a quarrel. The moment you say you are wrong, the other person will try to defend that point of view. No, I am right. And then you begin to start an argument. So arguments are always a case where you begin to try to prove your view, that you are correct. And the other person also begins to prove that that person is correct. And then ultimately, you don't end up in a peaceful way. But today, you know, these Roman Catholics, they want to go and talk to people of other religions. And they call that a dialogue. A dialogue is different from an argument. Dialogue means you talk about your views and you can explain why you hold on to that view, use whatever arguments you have, the reasons, and then I express my views and then I also give my arguments to support my view. So we begin to listen to each other, and then of course we may even form a third view, which is the synthesis, and then which are acceptable to both parties. So there is no conflict. There is what is called a dialogue, which is not an argument. So, in any case, this is what the Buddha did when he began to preach to people his message. You may have heard of the Singhalovada Sutra. This is a sutra where the Buddha speaks about how a layman should live the household life. The story is about a young man who was not very obedient to the father. The father had advised him, but he never listened to the father. So when the father was going to die, he thought, my son has not been obeying me. And so the son was, so he was very worried what is going to happen to my son. So he advised the son on the deathbed, you know, my son, you have not been listening to what I say, but at least now I am going to die. At least now you should listen to me, so that you will be able to live a good life and be successful in life. So only thing that I can tell you is, at least every morning you should go to the river, take a bath and clean yourself, and then you worship the six directions. And that is like north, south, east, west, and in between. And so he died after that. So the son thought, at least my father on his deathbed gave me this advice, so at least I will follow this advice. And so every morning he used to go and bathe in the river, and then immediately after coming out of the river, he used to bow down to the six directions. So the Buddha has this habit every morning when he comes out after his meditations. He goes out on Pindapata. You know what Pindapata is? Going from house to house to get food with his bowl. But on the just before he goes on the Pindapata, he looks into the world to see whether there is anything, any person that he could help. Now he looks into the world not just through his eyes, he has the psychic powers to look into the world and find out who is available to be taught. So when he looked into the world, he saw this young man who was bathing in the river, and so the Buddha went there. And when he came out of the river, he started bowing to these six directions. And the Buddha asked, why do you do this? Why are you bowing in these six directions? Oh, I'm doing this because my father on his deathbed gave me this advice that I should do this, and this is why I do it. How the Buddha could have said, oh, you stupid man, why are you doing this silly thing? This is not what you should be doing. He never said things like that. The Buddha never tells a person you are wrong. He was following Dale Carnegie's principles. You see, it's very interesting to find out when you read Dale Carnegie's book, you find, if you have been reading the sutras, you see the Buddha has been following all these things. Dale Carnegie wrote another book called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. That's also very interesting to read. He's a good writer. And then he wrote a third book called Public Speaking and Influencing People. That is also a good book. All these books, when I read these, I found that these were the principles that the Buddha has been following. When you read the sutras, you find this. And so, what the Buddha said was, oh, but in the Aryan discipline, now those days, the teachings of the Buddha was not called Buddhism. The word Buddhism came after the British came. So the British who gave that name, Buddhism. But during the time of the Buddha, he always called his teaching Arya Dhamma. The word Arya was used instead of Buddhism. And so he said, according to the Arya Dhamma, we don't worship the six directions in this way. We worship the six directions in a different way. See the way he put it? He didn't say, you are wrong. He didn't say, I am right. He simply said, I do it or we do it in a different way. So when he said that, this young man became interested in knowing this other way. What is this other way? So he said, we purify ourselves not by going and bathing in the river. We have a different way of purifying ourselves. And that is to refrain from harming others, to refrain from stealing, to refrain from sexual misconduct, to refrain from lying, refrain from harsh speech, and so on. You know what the five precepts are, it's like that. Practice the five precepts first. That is how you purify yourself. And then he said, the way we worship the six directions, he divided society into six parts. First the parents, then the teachers, then the husband or wife, then the friends and relatives, then the children, then the servants or whoever is helping them, and the priests in the temples, and so like that, divided into six. And we do our duties to these people. So in other words, doing your duty to society. So what he was trying to say was, this worshipping the sixth direction that he did was really worshipping gods. They believed that there were gods in the six directions, and if you worship the gods will protect you and help you. So what the Buddha was trying to say here was, it is not the gods that you should be worshipping. You should be doing your duties to society, other people, human beings like most other animals, they live in groups among other people. Human beings are not people who live alone. They are always living with other people. And when they live with other people, they help the others, and the others begin to help you. So if you do your duties to other people will do their duties to you. If you treat other people in a good way, other people will begin to treat you in a good way. That is the important thing. We take refuge not in gods who are invisible and we have never seen the gods, but it is just a belief. And instead of doing that, we should be doing our duties to the people around us who are to be seen and we know. And if we do our duties to the people around us, they will do their duties to us. They will treat us well. So the real protection comes not from gods, but from other people, from society. This is the message that was conveyed. You know these people, young people who are disobedient to their parents, they are mainly self-centered people. They are mainly thinking about themselves and what they want. I want this, I want that. I don't care about other people or what other people want. I only care about what I want, and I must have what I want. And so that is how they live. So if they begin to live like that, they get into trouble all the time. And so here the Buddha was giving a good advice where we should be doing our duties to others, to society, and then the society will look after themselves. Now this is how the monks are supposed to live. You see, the monks give the Dhamma to the people, and the people give the food and clothing and shelter to the monks. That is how the monks are living. There is an exchange. And even if you are not a monk, when you go and do a job, you are doing some service, and then you are paid. That pay is really what you get for doing what you are doing. So, if you are not doing a job, you are not getting any money, then you have to depend on your parents or your relatives or your friends, or the other way is to go and steal and rob, and this is how you have to be living. So the real way to live is through exchange. And that is the purpose of this thing called money. Money is what is called the medium of exchange. So we have to, in ancient times there was no such thing as money. There was what is called the barter system. You do something for me and I do something for you. It's another kind of exchange. A person like a farmer can give what is produced by that farmer to a person. Say you want to get a table made or a chair made. You go to the carpenter, but you don't have money. What you give is what you have been growing, maybe rice or maybe vegetables or whatever, and you give some to the carpenter, and the carpenter will make something for you. So it's like that. There is always change. And so that is the barter system, where people exchange things in this way. But later, of course, it came in the form of money, because every time you go to get something done with the carpenter may not need vegetables that you are trying to give. So that means you have no way of exchanging. So if you use a thing like money, money everyone needs, and so that is how money came into being, the convenience. So you see, here the Buddha, in trying to teach this young man, he never started an argument. He always pointed out his way. And by pointing out his way, he was able to explain. And the other person was able to appreciate what you are, your method. This is a different method of doing the same thing. That's how he produced it. But it was not really the same thing that he was talking about. But that was the way he introduced. So the important thing is, when the Buddha really spoke about the Dhamma, there was another important conflict that he tried to solve. That is what I call the problem of existence. The problem of existence. Existence is a problem. This is what the Buddha spoke of when he spoke about the Four Noble Truths. What is this problem of existence? The problem of existence is what is called the insecurity of life. The insecurity of life. What is life? Life is simply that we are born. From the day we are born, we are trying to live. Now what is the meaning of trying to live? We are trying to keep on living or keep on existing, which means to keep on living without dying. Because death can come at any moment. Death is not only for old people. Even a young child immediately after birth can die. Our life is dependent on conditions. Our life is dependent on conditions. If we don't eat, we die. If we don't drink water, we die. If we don't breathe, we die. If we don't have the proper temperature, we die. If we don't have the proper pressure, we die. So our life is dependent on conditions. If those conditions are not satisfied, we die. When the child is born, the mother or the father or whoever will have to feed the child, bathe the child, dress the child, do so many things for the child. If no one does that, the child is going to die. It's not only the human beings who are like that. All animals are like that. Dependent on conditions. Even the plants are like that, dependent on conditions. Everything, even inanimate things are like that, dependent on conditions. So whatever is dependent on conditions is insecure. That insecurity of life is the problem. When Charles Darwin spoke about evolution, what did he talk about? He pointed out that every living being or every living thing is struggling to exist. That is called the struggle for existence. He spoke of the struggle for existence and the survival of the fittest. They are struggling to exist, and whoever survives is only if that individual is fit to survive. And you become fit to survive by adaptation. You have to adapt to the environment. The environment can be a dangerous environment. If it is too cold, you can't survive in that cold climate. So you have to adapt to that. And that is why people wear clothes. They begin to wear all kinds of clothes to prevent the cold coming into the body. Now today, you are so much used to wearing clothes and that you think that the clothes just worn for beauty or style or all kinds of things, but it's not the real purpose of wearing clothes. The clothes are necessary mainly to protect your body. Because, you see, most animals have hairs on the body and that is like the clothes. But the human beings don't have hairs like that. And so, they have hair on the head, but they may be having a few hairs on the body, but that is not enough. So they have to wear clothes. So you see, this is all for protection. So you have to adapt yourself. So, it is by adapting to the environment that you are able to survive. So this is why this Charles Darwin started talking about the struggle for existence and the survival of the fittest. But the problem is, are we really existing? Because even Charles Darwin saw that this body is made of cells, according to modern thinking, is made of cells. You can't even see the cell without a microscope. Very tiny structures like a wall is made of bricks. So in a similar way, the body is made of cells. And every cell is destroyed. They are not permanent things. The old cells are destroyed, new cells are coming up. So the whole body is changed. After some time, it's a new body. This is why the child that is born is not the young man or woman who gets married. All different. Even the appearance is different. What remains is only the name. And maybe you can preserve your birth certificate. Or you might get an identity card or something like that, just to identify. Even identity cards are changed because you have to change the picture from time to time. Otherwise you can't be recognized. When I was in Sri Lanka, there was a doctor I knew. He used to come and talk to me and we had discussions about the Dhamma. So after some time, this doctor went to Australia and I went to United States. So after about 35 years, I went to Australia and I wanted to meet this doctor. And I went to a certain temple there, and so I called the doctor. I had his telephone numbers somehow, and I called the doctor, and this doctor came to see me. The doctor I saw was a different man. I couldn't recognize him. And he couldn't recognize me. That was a surprise. So you see, he has changed and I have changed. So, this is why, are we really existing? We are changing all the time. The young man or woman who got married, is that the same person? The old man or woman who dies, are we really existing? There was a philosopher who said, you cannot enter the same river twice. If you cannot enter the same river twice, that means the river is changing. Always old water comes in the new water coming in and the old water is going out. Always it's a new river. So in the same way, a human being is also a new human being that we meet the second time. Can we meet the same human being twice? So this is the important thing to understand. Are we really existing? Although even this Charles Darwin said, the survival of the fittest, even the fit is not really surviving. Of course, when he spoke about survival of the fittest, he was talking about the survival not of the individual, but the species or the kind of the generation survives, not the individual. Every individual has to die. There is no real survival. And this was what the Buddha saw. And in this process of evolution, the Buddha was also talking about evolution. He was talking about not the evolution of animals and plants. He was talking about the evolution of the human being. How the human being could evolve to a higher level. Now the modern human being, because of this thing called science, and scientific technology, we have so many things. We can even fly in the air, not with our wings, but with a machine. And we can even go to the moon if we have enough money. And if we don't drop down by accident, but not only that, we can even go to other planets like that with these in these rockets. But the problem is, still no one has found the way to keep on living forever. You see, death comes to everyone. This is the insecurity of life. This is the problem that the Buddha went out to solve. And he found the way out. And that is what is called nirvana. But nirvana is also called amata. Amata means deathlessness. There is no death. And that means immortality. Immortal means deathlessness. Mortal means death. Immortal means no death. But this immortality is not eternal life. Now some people think immortality is eternal life. And some people think immortality is to die and die forever. That is not immortality. The Buddha pointed out that the real immortality is to realize that we are not existing. And if we are not existing, how can we die? It is only by realizing that we are not existing that we can stop this. But the problem is, there is a conflict here. The conflict is, when we speak about the mind, there are two parts. There is a thinking part and there is the emotional part. In modern psychology, the thinking part is called the cognitive and the emotional part is called the affective. This is recognized in modern psychology and it is also recognized by the Buddha, but most Buddhists don't know about this. Today, the real teaching of the Buddha is almost lost because so many other views coming from other cultures, other philosophers have got mixed. And so the real teaching is almost not to be seen, but it can be found if we go and search for it. Because the Buddha used two words to refer to this. But today most people think these are synonyms. That means two words meaning the same thing. The mind. But actually, that thinking part the Buddha called mano. And the emotional part the Buddha called citta. It is the thinking part that is aware of reality or the truth about things, which means that everything is dependent on conditions and whatever is dependent on conditions is unstable. Like a piece of ice. A piece of ice is unstable because it turns into water easily. Why? Because it is dependent on the temperature. The piece of ice is dependent on the temperature. The moment the temperature changes, it becomes water. And even water is dependent on the temperature. If you heat the water, it becomes water vapor and you can't even see it. You see, everything, our life is also like that, dependent on conditions. So whatever is dependent on conditions is unstable. And what is unstable, it is unpleasant. And what is unstable and unpleasant is not under as we want. If it is not as we want, that means it is not under our power. If it is not under our power, then it is not mine. I cannot say this is mine. Now, if you get married and you have a wife or a husband, and the wife or the husband is doing all kinds of things against your will, then although you have a marriage certificate, you can't say this is my wife or my husband. And this is why people divorce. So in the same way, this body is dependent on conditions. And because it is dependent on conditions, it is unstable. And because it is unstable, it is unpleasant. And because it is unpleasant, it is not as you want. If it is not as you want, then it is not yours. Therefore the body, although you think this is my body, it is not your body. And if it is not your body, then you can't call that yourself. But most of the time you call your body yourself. If someone wants to take a picture of you, then you hold your body there and say, now this is the picture of myself. You see, the myself keeps on changing because the self that you have in your mind is different from the picture there. When you look at the picture, it's, oh, this can't be myself, this is an old man. No. Because you think you are a young man, but the picture shows an old person. Then how can... See, it's like that. The self is actually a picture in your own mind. That is what you call the self-image. So you see, the self that we are thinking of is not what we have. And even that is only an image. That is also not your real self. So the body is not yours. And if your body is not yourself, when the body begins to grow old, can you say, I am growing old? When the body falls sick, can you say, I am falling sick? When the body dies, can you say, I am dying? If the body is not yours, you are free from old age, disease and death. This is what the Buddha pointed out. If you can really understand this, you are free from old age, disease and death. But what prevents you from understanding this? It is your emotion. Although your thinking part is aware of the truth, the reality, the emotion says, no, this is myself. I want this to be permanent. You are asking for permanence in an impermanent world. The emotion is asking for permanence in an impermanent world. That is the conflict between emotion and reason. The thinking faculty is in conflict with the emotional part. That means the mano is in conflict with the chitta. This is the problem of life. And this is why the Buddha pointed out that the only solution is to get rid of the emotion. And that emotion is what the Buddha called tanha, today translated as craving. That word craving doesn't convey this meaning. The moment we use the word emotion, then you begin to understand. It is not craving, it is emotion. Tanha is emotion, not craving. Craving was a word used by some English man who came to translate these sutras. He thought the best word should be craving, but the word craving doesn't convey the meaning. The important thing to understand is to understand the meaning of what the Buddha is saying, not just memorizing words. So if we understand that what we have to do is to get rid of emotions, the Buddha found a way to get rid of emotions. And some modern psychologists still think, the Western psychologists still think emotion is necessary for the human being. But the Buddha pointed out the emotion should be taken out. You see, even if you think in terms of biological evolution, you see that the human being, what is special, human being is supposed to be the highest evolved animal, and what is special about the human being is this ability to think and reason out. All other animals are not able to do that. But other animals have emotions. So emotion is not what is special about the human being. And that is what makes the human being an animal. Emotion is what makes the human being an animal. Apart from other things like the body, of course. But it is by eliminating the emotions that the human being can rise above the normal state to a supernormal state. And that is what the Buddha achieved. So a Buddha is a person, a human being who has evolved to a higher level. And evolved to the level which is the ultimate level. Ultimate because a person cannot evolve beyond that. Because the process of evolution stops there. Why? Because the process of evolution continues only because of the struggle for existence. And the struggle for existence is what the Buddha called bhava tanha. Bhava means existence. Tanha is this urge towards existence. Tanha is this emotional urge to exist. So bhava tanha is the struggle for existence. So, that bhava-tanha, or the struggle for existence, was stopped. That is how he became a Buddha. And when that struggle stops, evolution stops. This is why it is the highest level in the process of evolution. You cannot evolve further. The ultimate level of evolution is the Buddha. And by reaching that state, he transcended even the gods. That is why when a person came and asked the Buddha, "Are you a god or deva?" He said, "No." "Then are you a yakka?" "A devil?" Said, "No." "Then are you a human being?" He said, "No." Then he asked, "Who are you?" "Well, if due to the presence of certain conditions a person could be called a devil, I don't have those conditions. If due to the presence of certain conditions a person could be called a yakka, I don't have those conditions. If due to the presence of certain conditions a person can be called a human being, I don't have those conditions." "There is only one word you can use to call me, and that is Buddha." Buddha means one who has awakened from the dream of existence. That person doesn't exist anymore. Although the body is there, that body is not the Buddha. And so, the Buddha doesn't exist even while the body is living. And if he doesn't exist, how can he die? Before a person can die, the person has to exist. Now, the Buddha is free from death. That is why it is the real immortality, deathlessness. That is why nirvana is called immortality. So you see, this was a conflict between the emotions and the thinking part. And this conflict was resolved by the Buddha. That is the resolution of the ultimate conflict. So I think this is the end, huh? 11:30 now.